Hello and welcome to another episode of Nerd and Tie. This week's topics will include the leaked Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, the new sci-fi reality series, Heroes of Cosplay, the regional convention scene that Trey Furr and I have been going through, the new Pat Labor live-action movie, and the declassification of Area 51. Nerds and nerdettes, welcome to the second episode of Nerd and Tie, the only nerd podcast this classy. I am, of course, Nick Izumi, and joining me this week, as always, is the intrepid Trey Dorn.
Hello. I don't know if you want me to say anything. I like pie.
And the equally intrepid and very northward Professor Furr.
How's it going, everybody?
It's exciting.
I'll say.
It's a and fantastic time to be a nerd.
Indeed.
Is it?
Well, okay, maybe not. But there is a lot of fun stuff to cover this week's episode.
And we should mention what day we're recording here.
Yes. This is Nerd and Tie. We are recording as of August 18th, 2013.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It is exciting. It's like it is a it's a date that will live in
a calendar.
Well, this podcast.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So I guess let's get rolling right away. Let's not waste any time. The first thing on our little roster of things that we wanted to talk about this week is a little movie called Guardians of the Galaxy that we mentioned.
Oh yeah.
We talked about that a little bit in our first podcast, and we got an almost instantaneous follow-up when someone managed to leak the trailer from Comic-Con onto
the
internet.
Trailer.
Yeah.
After, I think the funny part about that was that this happened a day after the fake trailer got released.
Well, the fake trailer had actually been around for a while, it turns out, but what happened was is that literally the day before, the director of Guardians of the Galaxy went to the news, that is not the real trailer. And so it got a whole bunch of press.
When the fake trailer was circulating, I remember looking at it and having people were actually had sent it to me, and you could tell it was fake by looking at it. And I was taken back to when Dragon Ball Evolution came out, and everyone and their brother was putting up Dragon Ball fan films and claiming that was the trailer for DB.
With the fake trailer, what I love is that I was like, well, that's the Narada getting destroyed from Star Trek 2009.
or the footage from Marvel vs. Capcom 3 for all the Rocket Raccoon stuff.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
But the real trailer. We're part of the real trailer.
Yeah,
League.
Let's talk about the real trailer.
Shaka.
Where do we even begin on how awesome that thing was?
For being recorded with a hand cam, it was surprisingly good good quality. You cannot find it anywhere online anymore. Disney has seen to it being snatched down pretty much the minute it gets taken up. Thankfully, few people have recorded the footage.
I have it saved on my desktop.
But I think the most exciting part about this, other than John C. Reilly showing up, is the absolutely fantastic Rocket Raccoon footage we get.
With the machine gun? The raccoon with the machine gun was excellent.
I can't stop watching that GIF. Just,
When they first announced they were going to be doing Rocket Raccoon, the first thought that crossed my mind, other than, oh my god, Rocket Raccoon is going to be in a movie before Wonder Woman is, was, are they going to make him like a cartoon, or is he going to be like an actual? And there it is. Like, it looks like a real raccoon with a machine gun screaming.
Well, I love the shot of all of them. Like, you know, it looks like the shot of them having been arrested, where he's standing next to Chris Pratt, and Chris Pratt is Star-Lord. That is genius casting, by the way.
Who is currently just absolutely ripped. I don't know.
Chris, any fan of Parks and Rec can tell you that Chris Pratt is a genius.
Also, other interesting news, I guess Vin Diesel is probably going to be voicing Groot.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
They basically said, are you really able to make this decision? And his response was basically, I'm Vin Diesel, I can decide whatever I want.
The thing is, they were trying to sell this movie as an action comedy, and even just this half trailer makes me very excited for the results, right down to John C. Reilly calling our heroes assholes.
Well, I think it was an unseen character in the scene who said, "What a bunch of a-holes."
Oh, yeah.
In response to John C. Reilly. Let's be clear.
Okay, well, pardon me. I watched it once.
And he called them a-holes, I want to point out, which made it funny.
One thing I noticed in the trailer, that's like the only comedic part of it. They did this in a very serious fashion that looked like it's just a straight up action movie.
Except for the fact that the background music was Hooked on a Feeling.
Yeah.
And oh, the God, raccoon with the machine gun. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that part too. I cannot stop watching that GIF. I have it like on a loop on its own page running constantly, just screaming raccoon, lighting up a bunch of nameless figures with the machine gun as ever. I think I needed most in my life.
I don't want to go to work Monday. Yeah, it's right, raccoon with a machine gun. I can go to work with Monday, and I'm going to kick butt, too.
Everything's better with machine guns.
Yeah, so raccoons.
Raccoons are better with machine guns.
So, yeah, I wasn't really caring too much about the Guardians of the Galaxy movie until now. Now it's a thing that I must have.
Well, see, just when I think that I can't care enough about it, they do something else with it that makes my caring level actually increase, like past the ceiling. Leading up to the trailer, I'm like, all right, this is going to be really cool. I don't know much about it. I don't know much about Guardians of the Galaxy. I know there's a raccoon in it. I know there's like a living tree man, potentially, from my understanding of things. But then I'm like, okay, I'm pretty set with how much I want this movie. Trailer gets released. Okay, I guess I want this movie even more now.
I was, I think I said, like, last podcast, this is one of those ones where I'm like, well, it's cool, Disney is taking a risk, but I'm not sure if I'm all that excited for it, and now every time they make an announcement, I'm like, this is going to be the greatest thing, no matter what it turns out as.
Well, and Karen Gillan's playing the bad guy, and, you know, there's, yeah.
This is
really
I think while Pacific Rim is going to continue to be the greatest thing ever made in my mind, I think Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be able to make a run at the greatest movie of all time.
It's going to take a lot to unthrone giant robot hitting monster over the head with a tanker, but.
Yeah, everything about that scene in Pacific Rim defied the laws of physics, but it also was awesome.
But I think that a machine gun wielding raccoon might be able to.
I don't know. Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, that's pretty tempting.
The only thing that could make it better would be a Guardians of the Galaxy Pacific Rim crossover. And
if any of our listeners, all right,
I'm just saying Guillermo del Toro, Pacific Rim 2. Pacific Rim 2 needs Rocket Raccoon. That's just all I'm saying. Listen to me, Guillermo del Toro, because you're going to totally hear this, because obviously a podcast made by three guys no one's ever heard of is going to be listened to by a world-famous director. Your next Pacific Rim movie needs Rocket Raccoon.
Pacific Rim is owned by Warner Brothers, who own DC, so that could also be a great way to transition into a DC-Marvel cross.
But hey, to our listeners out there, if you've just heard anything in there that might pique your artistic interest, please feel free to draw fan art of a Pacific Rim Guardians of the Galaxy crossover and post it to Tumblr, where all three of us will probably reblog it multiple times.
And I will post it personally to the Nerd and Tie website at nerdandtie.trhonline.com.
It's going to happen.
Someone step up.
Help us light this up. Make it happen.
Also, if you've got any Fur/Nick Azumi fan art. What? Post that too.
There's way too much gay fan fiction of me.
No, I can't say that about myself.
I wish I couldn't say that about me.
I've appeared in fan fiction, but never slash.
Now, to any of our listeners out there that might have any writing talents, if you'd like to be featured on the Nerd and Tie website, feel free to write Trey Dorn / actually don't.
Don't.
For the love of God, don't.
Don't
let that happen.
No.
We're going to get threats at this point, I think. I'll do it.
Well, to be fair, it wouldn't actually offend me all that much, but I'd make you all read it, so don't do it.
It's not that it offends me. It's just that even the fact that one exists is more than enough, honestly.
Yeah, wait. Lovely. I hate to derail this entire thing just starting after our first story, but
I know.
There is seriously slash fiction involving you that exists?
Yeah.
Whose fault is that?
A friend of my friend who saw me in crossplay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just uncreative.
I know. That's it. I don't know.
We also have that bit of faux slash from one episode of Otaku Tonight.
Yeah, so that's like one and a half.
Didn't I start writing that?
I think you
Wait,
might
that
have.
Was my fault. Yeah. I apologize.
Oh, man. So yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy is going
to
be great.
That's right. Okay. I wrote it. It was about you and Nick trying to create the script for an episode and...
Oh, yeah, all weird.
I think someone might have touched someone's manhood there, yeah. But okay!
Guardians of the Galaxy, gonna be great.
Well, that got off base really quickly. So,
do we have anything else to say about Guardians of the Galaxy?
It can't get here soon enough, and I'm actually really, really upset that we have to move on from this happy topic to something not so happy.
That's right. Because we're going to move...
Speaking of cosplay...
Oh, God. So we're going to move on to probably the worst thing that's happened to the world. No. It's not that bad. For those of you who have been paying attention to either reality TV, Sci-Fi Channel, or both, have noticed that the 6-episode series Heroes of Cosplay debuted this last Tuesday. And it's a thing. It's a thing. Now, the series itself is going to follow around up to, like, I think 9 cosplayers, but the first episode only has 6 of them. Heroes of Cosplay is really a pet project put together by professional cosplayer Yaya Han. Now, you can think, I have many opinions about Yaya Han. Most importantly, that she's the most unnatural human being ever to be put in front of a camera. But, I will not actually like criticize her cosplay. Her cosplay actually is quite excellent.
Fantastic.
Some of the people don't like the kind of stuff she does, but her actual like work stuff is actually really good. Now,
it looks good.
Now I watched the show. Now I was familiar with a couple of the two of the cosplayers who were on the show already because I watched Morgan Spurlock's documentary, A Fan's Hope, and so I had high hopes. And before I start ripping the heck out of this show, I just want to be really clear: all of the cosplayers involved in the series are very talented cosplayers.
Well, no, they're fantastic. Some of the stuff they put together is great.
So let's just keep that in mind. This is not me criticizing the cosplay of the series.
Nor is it any of us criticizing the cosplay of the series.
Right. First off, the series follows around these people as they go to different conventions and enter the cosplay contest. Now, Yaya Han's a bit of a friggin' elitist when it comes to cosplay, and she pretty much criticizes anyone who doesn't enter, you know, cosplay contests as not real cosplayers, really, if you look at the way she seems determined, which bothers the heck out of me, because honestly, the majority of cosplayers never enter a contest, and heck, Yaya Han herself does not compete anymore, so, but she, you know, the show makes a big deal in the opening about how, you know, people compete for cash prizes. Now, everyone on this call has been involved in cosplay contests. I've been hosting cosplay contests for quite some time, the better part of a decade. I have been a cosplay judge. I used to do serious costuming way back in the day, and I'm talking like over 10 years ago. But, you know, I get it. I know Nick has run a cosplay contest for many years.
I've also competed. I organized that one. I've also judged, competed.
Yeah.
And like every possible angle on this.
Well, and Chris has hosted a couple times.
I've actually been in a couple, and I was recently a judge last year.
That's true. Okay.
So we all have
a cosplay background, and so I want to make that clear. The show makes this huge deal about people competing for cash prizes. The 90% of cosplay contests, I will say, do not have any cash prizes.
I've been to more than 10 conventions in my life over the past 3 years, and I have never seen a cash prize handed out at a cosplay contest.
I have been to
the first cosplay contest I ran. The prize was a vintage collection of Nadesco comic books. Yeah,
I've been to a lot more cons than I've probably been to more cons than the two of you combined at this point. But
well, you are very old.
Yes, I am. I've also been, you know, doing this since the mid 90s. There are big shows, like huge shows will have a cash prize often, but you get to any con, like cons that have like 1,000, 3,000 attendance, No Brand Con's the closest, where they give out in dealer room credit, effectively, where they give internal money that can be used in the dealer room and towards next year's registration.
But it's nowhere near the amount that they're giving out in Heroes of Cosplay. $30.
We're talking $30 worth of stuff. we're not talking like huge amounts. Now, so that's my first problem with the show. Secondly, a lot of the stuff feels really kind of awkward and staged, and I think it's the fault of reality television, where normally when you cast a show that just follows people around, like there are two types of reality shows. There's ones where people are fighting for some sort of prize at the end of the series, and then there's the other kind that follows people around, like your Housewives of X Place. Okay, this is really of the follow around variety, and rather than cast based on ability to perform in front of the camera and act natural on camera, these people were cast for their ability to cosplay, mostly because most of them have connections to Yaya Han, and so because of that, because they've been cast for a different ability, they're all really stilted on camera. Most of them. Some of them aren't, but
I think it actually even goes beyond the people being scripted. The dialogue being scripted. I mean, Nick, you had a great point. You were watching this earlier in the evening, and you sent this message like, "Hey, they're bowling. I bowl too. They're just like me." it feels really forced. Yeah. The part that felt like actually almost criminal to me in terms of scripting, and somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, because if I'm wrong, next podcast we will do, I will say, sorry, I was wrong about this. But until I can be given proof otherwise, I do not believe that cosplay contest that they showed in this episode was legit.
Okay. So it was, and I'm going to get to that. I've got 20 things to complain about before we get to that. It's the first important thing here, and this is something that bugs the crap out of me. First off, when there's a lot in the early part of the episode of Yaya Han trying to get her a specific costume together, and trying to get all the details right, and last minute, they painted it the wrong color, now they got to do it. Here's a slight problem with that. Now, it is all supposed to be so she can premiere it at Wizard World Portland. Here's the problem with that entire sequence. That is a costume that she debuted in its completion a week before Wizard World Portland. So there's some fun. There are photographs of her in it. Secondly, there is a whole scene mentioned where one of the cosplay, where Becky and Victoria's first encounter with Yaya is supposed to be there, except for the fact that they previously had done a photo shoot with her at an earlier event.
Yeah.
So, and next off, and this is, and let's put a little bit of icing on the cake. Some of the footage labeled as Wizard World Portland is of Anime Expo, which takes place, I want to point out, not in the same city or state. It's a Los Angeles convention that's supposed to somehow be this convention center in Portland. Now, I don't know if maybe they didn't get enough B-roll of the Portland convention, but
if they wanted to use stock footage from the conventions, honestly, whatever, magic of television, that's fine.
That's all a problem.
And then, it was really. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
I was to say there is. It is really criminally clear that Yaya Han is familiar with most of the people on the show, and it made it. And I mean, like, I know part of that is reality TV. Oh, it's dramatic because she knows these people and she's judging them. But it's like, really, come on, just.
And from there, let's go to the cosplay contest.
Which I am not convinced was real. I am
convinced it was real, and I'm convinced it was poorly done because let's talk. There's a whole set thing that happened with Heroes of Cosplay when they went in and did two conventions took over the cosplay contests. Let's be clear. At least based on what I've been reading. I've been reading things from various people's blog posts from a convention that was in, I think, Kansas City, where some of the cosplayers complained about it. Apparently, the cosplayers who were participating in the contests, who were not part of the show, were made to do their skits multiple times for the cameras without warning. And before they actually had anyone come out, they made the audience cheer a bunch, so they'd have B-roll of the audience cheering.
I figured that was staged. I was willing to bet real money that that part was staged. I'm glad I was right.
Now the first thing that anyone, like, the first thing, including, like, first off, I thought, wow, it's weird. There's no prejudging.
Yeah, because that's the first thing.
Any first-class contest is going to have prejudging. But then I thought, maybe they just didn't show it. Maybe they're just fast-forwarding it. Until we get to the point where Yaya Han is, you know, making her comments about they announced last cosplayer, and it's not ex-cosplayer who's a participant in the show. Where was she? She didn't have the costume done. Oh, I'm sorry. If there was prejudging, you'd know she didn't have the costume done, because you wouldn't have been at prejudging and been disqualified from the contest. Now,
furthermore, in my limited experience, judging is the thing that I have the least experience with directly, but even when I was running cons, I usually gave the judges, like, a full list of who was participating. They would have known that before they even went in.
Right, because you need it for the score sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know what order they're coming out.
Yeah, and the judges, during the contest itself, I've never been to a contest where the judges talk directly to the cosplayers on stage. Yaya Han was asking basically the people in the show, like, oh, how did you make your costume? What did you use? Oh, that's store-bought. These are things that she would have known
in
had they done prejudging.
Right, because prejudging is the time where you look at craftsmanship, you look at accuracy, because you can get within inches of the costume. You can look at every detail. You talk to them about how they built it, who built what, is this part bought, is this part not bought, is this, you know, a new fabrication, whatever. All of that stuff goes into prejudging. And the fact is, also, frankly, that looked like it was just a masterclass level cosplay.
Yeah, there were 20 people on stage at the end, and they didn't have they didn't have multiple class awards.
Yeah, there was no beginner's class, there was no advanced, and maybe they had those at Wizard World Portland, but they didn't show them on TV. But it's weird because it's also only three judges. Three judges. You had Jason David Frank, Yahya Han, and the guy who is a comics writer, artist and writer, whose name I cannot remember.
It escapes me at the moment,
who
too.
Who cares? Jason David Frank That was the highlight of the episode for
him. I feel bad because I forgot this guy's name, and it's going to come to me later. But I loved at the one point where Yahya Han and her co-judges, she's the least famous person up there.
I'll be honest, I hadn't even heard of her until this show. I've seen pictures, I guess, of her, but I've never, like, with how involved I am with the con scene, you'd think that I would have at least heard of her name at some point.
I had heard of her.
I tend to avoid any cosplayers who are quote-unquote famous, just because...
Well, she seems to have avoided the straight line usually you can draw between professional cosplayer and softcore porn. That hasn't happened. So
that's impressive, actually.
I should probably clarify. First off, for those who are not familiar with cosplay, I should probably explain what prejudging was, since we just complained about it for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Prejudging is where, when a cosplayer signs up for a cosplay contest, they sign up for a prejudging slot, which happens hours before the contest, where they go in front of the judges in, like, a side room or sometimes even a hotel room, but, like, a separate room where the judges get to spend, you know, like, you know, a period
10 minutes
of time.
Usually.
Yeah. It depends on the con, depends on how much time they schedule. Anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes with the cosplayer, looking at the costume up close and talking to the cosplayer about it. And this allows them to come up with their craftsmanship and accuracy scores without having to only have a 15-second window on stage. And then with the actual contest, provide things like performance scores and, you know, and things like that. So I think we should be clear about that.
Cons will even grade your performance based on, like, what you pre-do. Like, I know ASEN does that, but...
Yeah. And then I was going to complain about something else. Oh, yeah, and then I was going to talk about the line. Now, there is a really common line that you will see from, and this happens all the time, professional cosplayers into softcore pornography as time goes by to get more attention. Yaya Han has avoided this by pretty much changing things into doing a professional cosplay line of products, and that's how she's keeping her business intact instead of just relying on people willing to pay for photos of her. So that's why I think that's how she's kind of avoided the pitfalls. But there's kind of a tragic story with a lot of professional cosplayers that, yeah.
I remember that was actually something that I first became made aware of through the No Brand Con forums when way back in the day when someone asked for a professional cosplayer to come in. And I remember I think it was actually you, Trey, who's like, does this person do porn too?
I think it turned out they did.
Yeah, yeah, and then on their site, yeah, there was indeed an 18 plus section that you had to pay extra, and yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of things wrong with Heroes of Cosplay, and I think the one thing to me that really stood out, leading up to Heroes of Cosplay, there was a big to-do because Linda Stasi of the New York Post.
My God, what a horrible human being.
Right. Yes. Did that. Well, here's the thing. I can sympathize with her at this point because she went on to basically say, I think some of the highlights were, how can these people maintain a 9-to-5 job and do this? They're basically living in a fantasy world, where they become their characters. How do they have time for anything else? I'm going to assume that she had never been exposed to cosplay before, because watching Heroes of Cosplay and seeing this happen in front of me, I can see how anybody off the street without any sort of idea of cosplay would have gotten that image from this show.
Some of the stuff in her article talked about how, the people really want to be the character, like all this stuff, when really all it was is like one acting. Person's comment, yeah. The Merida cosplayer made a comment. Oh, I think Yaya Han did too, but hers was in her pile of BS, and I just kind of started tuning her out after a while. The Merida cosplayer actually was my favorite because she actually like cared about her stuff so much. I mean, obviously she has some body image problems, which is terrible because she's a very attractive young woman. But you know, it's
that was sort of an uncomfortable laughter moment for me too when she went into the gym and she's like, "Oh, I put on so much weight," and you're like, "You're the perfect." Like, that's another thing that I think is harmful to the cause. Like the show does is that I know a lot of people that don't necessarily fit the body type, quote unquote, of the character they're cosplaying, but that doesn't matter. I mean,
right. I have a problem criticizing the cosplayer in this situation because it's really more that this particular person is too self-critical of her own body, and it's more of a societal problem than it is a problem necessarily with her. And it's true that she said it and that she was going to the gym and
working on an elliptical for 5 minutes in jeans, from what I saw.
I thought she was wearing stretch pants.
Something. It was horribly scripted either way.
Yeah, well, everything in that show was horribly scripted. Yaya Han is the least natural person on camera I have ever seen. I'm just saying it because it is obvious and true, and my God.
The one thing I will say about Yaya Han, though, is that I was trying to figure out was how much of it was her actual elitism coming in, and how much of it was her going out of her way to come off as the meanest person ever. Because, well, like, the comment that she had to her, I think it was, like, boyfriend or fiancé, they're like, "Oh, can you work extra hours?" And he's like, "I don't know." And, I mean, it was so painfully scripted. And it was, like, high school theater bad acting.
Yeah, and this whole show is her fault. It's, I mean, this, this show is her project. It is her, you know, like, she's the one who's, like, was shopping this around and trying to get this to happen. She really is, I think, that much of an elitist. And she's trying to prove... And I think there's this whole idea that she's trying to present herself as this authority voice for cosplay, like an ambassador of cosplay. I'm like,
yeah, that line.
Oh my God!
I think that was within the first 20 seconds of the show, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was within the first 4 minutes, because that was when I sent for my first angry text. So.
The biggest problem that happens in the cosplay community is the needless elitists, and there's more real than just Yaya. And they come of both genders, every flavor, and they're everywhere. And they are a minority, but they won't shut up.
They ruin fun for everyone else because they...
Yeah. I can think of a few people in particular that there is a convention that I will not name whose cosplay contest is viewed as sort of like it's a convention with a good number, like I'll say under 2,000 attendees, more than 1,000, but they have hard times filling up their cosplay contest because while there are plenty of people cosplaying at their convention, no one wants to put up with the contest.
Mm.
Because of the
attitudes. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I happen to even consider myself friends with this person, but they are horrible when it comes to this stuff.
I will say though that there were a couple of really good points that the show made. I thought seeing some of the ways they go about making the costumes was really cool.
I wish there was more of that.
I was about to say I really wish there was more of that because I didn't feel like they didn't show like the real like what I would call a hero of cosplay is that person who actually like goes around looking for the right fabric or the right material, and they're not, you know, doing it to show that they're a jerk to their significant others. They're doing it because they really like that character. They want it to look right.
Yeah,
exactly. Like the head casting thing was really cool. I thought that was really cool to watch. The way that that I don't remember her name right now, the Merida cosplayer doing the wig with the Sharpie. I mean, that's a common technique, and it was really cool to see that shown on screen. Like, more of that, I think, is what we need. Other than,
well, you know, I would have liked a show like Face Off, where like a elimination style kind of with like cosplayers trying to put together stuff within a certain amount of time and competing against each other internally. Because I know that a show needs like some sort of conflict or some sort of aspect like that, and I think that something like, you know, if you created it in the sense of like a, you know, a top cosplayer or something like that, where it was just a competition in itself, I think that would be more fun to watch than this awkward representation of the con scene. Because it's, nobody cheers when you walk into the hall with your cosplay on.
Yeah, that was the other part too, where I'm like, I could just imagine the directors being like, all right, everybody, now they're going to come down the stairs, just stop what you're doing
and
cheer.
You don't see anyone cheering, you just hear it when they walk into frame.
I would say there is cheering, like you occasionally get cheering if you're cosplaying a popular character from a shonen anime series and there's a bunch of preteen girls around. There will be some form of cheering.
Yeah, but not for your D&D OC.
Yeah, not exactly.
And those two cosplayers, by the way, who did their D&D characters, so who are also in the Morgan Spurlock documentary, do impress. Like you could, like they did good work in that show, like in that episode. But if you really want to see them do some impressive stuff, go back and watch A Fan's Hope, the Morgan Spurlock documentary, because their cosplay they did at that year's San Diego Comic-Con was phenomenal. The animatronic head on that thing was incredible that they built.
That was the they were the Mass Effect cosplay group, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They do good. Like they did a really simple cosplay for Wizardworld Portland, so I mean, I was, you know, just sort of like but when they do incredible stuff, they do incredible stuff, and yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of if anything, because yeah, I looked up a little bit of their stuff. I didn't feel like their D&D thing really represented how cool they can be. I don't know.
I will say though that I'm glad that if anybody won that sham of a cosplay contest, it was a Galactus cosplayer. That was fantastic.
I thought it was so weird. Like I was like, it's so weird when Yaya Han was talking about like how impressed she was with and using the automotive paint. I'm like, that's what you paint that with. If you're doing it, like anybody who's done armor of that kind of, that's not surprising. That's normal. I mean, yes, the Galactic cosplayer did a great job with it. I'm not, you know, trying to take away from him, but like you shouldn't be surprised if you know what you're doing that's what he used. I'm betting she wasn't surprised. I'm betting she was poorly performing for the camera.
Happy he had a little tiny Silver Surfer on his shoulder.
I was glad he had a little planet to eat backstage.
That was awesome.
Bring snacks. That's important when you're stuck in a long line.
There was a line of 20 people from what I saw on stage. Oh, yeah. It wasn't that long.
Jesse had a weird judges? Had this long line of other people around him in only his scenes. Then they disappeared for the rest of the contest.
Yeah, I'm betting we saw like. You know what? I'm betting there were other categories that we just didn't see. There's gotta be.
Yeah, because there was like a really like basic like 2009 Trek uniform behind him and stuff like that. We didn't see that after that point.
Yeah, there's got to have been like a beginner's class and you know, an intermediate class. Wizard World Portland was too big of a show not to have them. But I, you know, it's the entire thing is, you know what it is? You know what it reminds me of? It's back when we didn't know what we were doing running No Brand Con, back in the early days when we would run our cosplay contest before we did pre-judging. That's what it reminded me of, where you have like three or four judges who just have to judge off the stage. And that's when I had a cosplayer start screaming at me after the contest. oh, man, I was a judge that year. It was not good. yeah, she was very angry with me. You know, guys,
next it reminded me of an event that I was at sometime last year. One other one that I won't be naming, but where they actually didn't know their person who was running their cosplay contest had left on them, and they needed to come up with something at the last minute, and they asked me to throw some stuff together, and I did the best I could with, you know, 12 hours to put something together, but it did seem like a 12-hour put together contest, not a professionally run one.
Yeah, you know, I will say it's not as bad as some of the small cons I've been to, some of the small comic cons I've been to, where their costume contest judging consists of holding the microphone up to the audience and having them cheer for each cosplayer, and whoever gets the highest cheer gets the
I hate those.
Anyways, you know what? I am going to cosplay next week, because next week is GeekCon, and I've got my best cosplay done ever.
Oh, my God.
Which, next week, which, I don't know, are we done talking about the atrocity that is Heroes of Cosplay? I don't know that I can talk about it anymore.
I figured we were segueing out of it.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
It's, I am going to cosplay next week. I'm going to debut my Steve Carlsberg cosplay.
Yes! Now, that's right, Trey. As you said, GeekCon is next weekend, which leads us into our next topic.
Yes.
As many of you know, and if you aren't aware yet, I don't know if you've really been listening to the podcast to this point, but all three of us are located comfortably in the Midwest. A lot of us have connections to some of the first anime conventions in the state of Wisconsin. And really, the fall con season starts off next weekend with GeekCon, which is in Madison, Wisconsin. At the Marriott Middleton something or other.
Yeah, it's the Marriott Madison West in Middleton, Wisconsin. It's literally half a block out of Madison.
Yes. Which is, I believe, the GeekCon sixth year, if I'm not mistaken. Sixth
more
or
than
seven.
That.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Let me take a look.
I think it's seventh year.
But you should my Steve Carlsberg cosplay is excellent and quite convincing. Which you may be asking yourself, how do you cosplay Steve Carlsberg from Welcome to Night Vale, a radio show?
Are you
going
to knock coffee cups out of people's hands, or like?
No, I've bought a box of "Hello, my name is" stickers, and I'm just going to write Steve Carlsberg on it because I haven't seen any fan art of Steve Carlsberg, so I figure I should become the representation.
Put yourself out there. I like it.
This is year seven for. Geek
yes,
Con.
It is. I thought so. But yes, this is year seven for GeekCon. Some of their guests this year include Christopher Patton. Who else do they have? A whole plethora of people.
I didn't look. I don't know.
I'm going to be in the artist alley most of the weekend.
I'm going to be in the artist alley most of the weekend, too.
Yeah, you're like kitty corner from us,
I'm
actually.
Almost exactly across the aisle from you, yes. So if you feel like meeting myself or meeting Nick Izumi, you can find both of us hanging out in the artist alley throwing pennies at each other.
Yes.
This will probably happen, and it's going to be really sad.
Well, I will unfortunately not be there next weekend.
Because he
Boo.
Sucks.
Because of reasons that I don't really want to get into right now.
He punched a baby. It's a thing.
Yeah, they don't let me back. It's
baby punching.
Right. I think GeekCon's going to be a lot of fun for people that do go. It might be fun for people that don't go. I don't know. But that's coming up. What else have we got in the regional con scene? In about a month, in Minneapolis, we've got Crypticon, which is a horror convention, horror sci-fi, that's going to be held at the Convergence Hotel. I don't remember what that one's called. But
Sheraton?
Yes. I think that's where it's going
to
be.
It used to be the Sheraton, at least.
But it's looking to be a lot, like, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's some cool people we know that are going to be there running a Borderlands themed room party. That's the weekend of September 27th through the 29th. That the X-Geek crew is going to be there running a Borderlands themed room party, which will be fun. That's your sort of thing. Either of you going to that one? I'm not. I will not be there because
I live in Indiana. So when I go up north, it's a commitment.
I've got both the con that I run coming up in a couple months and a wedding, so I don't have a whole lot of excess funds. So.
And I was just cast in the local theater productions or the group's production of Spamalot, which is a week after Crypticon, so I can't go to Crypticon. So
you've got Hell Week.
I do. That'll be fun.
Oh man.
But shortly after Crypticon, Anime Fusion is going to be held in the Twin Cities as well. Gots to have Fusion. October 18th through the 20th. That is at the hotel that's right outside of the Mall of America there.
The Thunderbird?
Near the IKEA. So it's near the Thunderbird. Boy, I wish. It's almost as if I have a thing here that I could just pull up and say.
You have the internet.
I do.
That's the only reason this show can even happen.
I know. We're in different cities. But I will say October 19th is KokomoCon in Kokomo, Indiana. Now, I went there last year. I had a table. And it was a thing.
A thing that happened.
It was a thing that happened.
It's a place called Kokomo. That's where we want to go.
Yes, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. And actually, yes, I do start singing that song every time I drive towards Kokomo and I see the sign. last year, like, I had a table there last year, and they probably had 700 attendees. It's not a huge show, but they probably had over 100 vendors. So,
Bending Con.
Yeah, I sold a book.
Mm.
I mean, it's a one-day con, so it wasn't like I sold a book in a whole weekend, but I sold a book all con.
Ow.
And it was a $50 table last year. It's a $60 table this year if I decide to do it. So I might be there. I might not. They still have creator tables open, so I could still choose to do it. But if you feel like, I will say, though, if you go there, you can probably force vendors to give you a deal because they're desperate for anyone to buy anything because they have
a
vendor room. They have a vendor room sized for a con of, like, 10,000 attendees, but they have 700.
Right on. So if you're not going to Fusion, which is that weekend as well, you could go to Kokomo.
Yeah.
Fusion, again, is at the Ramada Mall of America, right across from the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota. I'll be there. I might be premiering a Tomba cosplay, too, so I might be running around in nothing but green shorts and a pink wig.
Oh, dear God.
But you know, what's really important is what happens in November.
Yes, November. Which is everybody's second favorite Wisconsin anime convention.
Aw, thank you.
You're outnumbered here 2-1, Nick.
I know, but...
Hey, I say it's my favorite convention, I don't run.
Yeah, actually, I'll say it that way. The favorite convention that I don't run...
But I don't really run No Brand Con anymore, so work harder, Chris, for my life.
Work harder, okay. I say as I'm going to miss a whole bunch of meetings because of a theater production that I'm in.
work harder for my love, Chris.
I will try. Daijokan's in November. That's gonna be a lot of fun. That is November 22nd through the 24th.
Mm.
In Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, at the Kalahari Resort and Hotel, where it's been for the last 2 years, and this is also Daisho's 7th year, if I'm not mistaken.
Sixth, because we started the year after Geek.
Yeah.
But
Daishokan's great because all three of us are going to be there.
We're all going to be there, which means we will be recording an episode of Nerd and Tie there that weekend.
The only episode where we'll all be in the same room.
it's going to be weird. I might actually have to wear clothes for that. No, I won't have to.
I'll have to bring a microphone that can record more than one person.
Yeah. But,
I'll have to be awesomer than ever and probably be half dead because I work that con.
But yeah, that's the con Nick helps run and co-founded.
Which not only is Nick going to be running the convention, he's also a guest, technically. Yes,
as he's appearing as part of a Talker Tonight, which is...
Yeah, that's
for a Talker Tonight with Professor Fur, yes. where Nick is his current sidekick, replacing the other one, who we don't talk about.
Replacing the other guy that... Yeah, no, as far as I'm concerned, Nick is the only co-host that I
like to think of myself as like Dr. McCoy to whoever the hell the doctor was in that first Star Trek pilot who no one remembers anyway.
Or you're like that black other doctor to Dr. McCoy who showed up in one episode.
Yeah.
You're Spear Chucker. That's a MASH reference. It's not racist. It might have been racist in man.
Oh, what's happening? Oh, what happened to this show already? Oh, man. But I know.
And Rene Auberjonois played the Padre in the original MASH film, and then he later played Odo, and we bring it all back to Star Trek. Because, again, Odo appeared in many episodes with Worf, and Worf appeared in the first episode of Next Generation, which had Dr. McCoy in it. In the pilot.
Also, Rene Auberjonois was the first actor to play General Zod.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Wait, how was he the first actor to play General Zod?
He did it in a cartoon.
Okay, because I was like, he wasn't in Superman 2.
No, he was in one of the cartoons.
General Zod appeared in a cartoon prior to Superman 2?
Yeah, he did. It was the episode The Hunters of one of the I believe it was one of the
Super Friends,
like 70 or? Superman cartoons, yeah. And he's like, let me tell you about the Phantom Zone. That was a terrible impression.
But also, I want to point out that episode of Otaku Tonight has some wonderful guests on it.
We do. We can't announce the first two because like we're still kind of in works with the lovely people of Daishokan.
But more importantly, I was going to say me.
Yeah, right. Trey's going to be on there talking about his stuff that he does.
Screw everyone else. Come for me.
What else are we doing that weekend, Nick? We're gonna premiere an episode of Basement Home Companion. We're gonna do stand up.
I'm going to die because I'm gonna be really. I'm just gonna run myself into the ground.
And I'm gonna be sitting in the artist alley selling my comics.
So basically, what we're saying is, be at DaishoCon. Be at DaishoCon. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's probably one of the most fun conventions that I've ever been to.
It's the same building as a water park.
It is.
Okay. Oh, by the way, okay. I just double checked. I was wrong. Rene Auberjonois was actually the second actor. He was Terrence Howard did play the part first.
Booyah!
Glad we cleared that up.
And then I think the trip begins.
I think to round out the year, we have a convention that Nick is going to be a guest at again. Nick, you are going to be a guest at Anime Apocalypse.
That is Apocalypse. Yep, in that weekend after Christmas. And yeah, last year they got they had a snow emergency, and I ended up doing 12 hours of panels because their other guests canceled. So. I kind of hope I won't do that again, although it was fun.
And
it's a weekend after Christmas, so December 27th through the 29th in Rockford, Illinois at the Clock Tower Convention Center.
Excellent. Hooray. So be there at that one if you can. I might show up. I'll just show up and crash all your panels, Nick. Like that'll. Trey, meet me there.
Okay, it's in the middle.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's go to Anime Apocalypse.
If you guys actually show up, we could just do another, nerd and tie thing. That's an idea.
We'll see if I can make that happen.
Yeah. You should have them bring in Nerd and Ty as guests.
Why not?
You know, I could probably talk them into something like that. Like, I did have fun. Like, I mean, it was really tiny, really, like, it was a starter upper con, and they're still finding their legs, but I had some fun. I got to show all my internet videos to an audience, and they didn't boo me off the stage. So that was that was nice. Actually, they wanted me to go over the hour that they allotted me, so...
I mean, that's true. If I was a guest there, I'd maintain my record of never being a guest in my own time zone. So,
yeah, excellent.
Yes. Yeah. Last con to have me out as a guest was in Denver.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Spring. Anomaly.
Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
But that rounds out the year for conventions in the Midwest. I'm sure there are a lot more that I'm not remembering or that I'm not aware of.
We'll talk about them in a later episode.
Once we find out about their presence. If we did not mention a convention that you'd like us to mention, please send us an email or a message on our Nerd and Tie Facebook page or the main website.
If you go to nerdandtie.trhonline.com, there's a contact tab on our site, which is a form that you can fill out and shoot us an email. And in fact, actually, I'm just going to go and say, if you ever want us to read your email on the air, go ahead and tell us. And we will make fun of you religiously.
We might not even tell. We might not even get your permission. I don't know. Is that a sort of thing we have to get permission for?
No.
Okay, good. We're going to do it anyway. Oh. We're going to read it on the air anyway.
Send us your stuff.
We'll make fun of your spelling. We will make fun of all spelling errors, probably your name as well.
And your mom.
Yes.
And your punctuation.
Pretty much the whole family. Yes.
We should I think that's enough for the original concert. We should probably move forward.
Yes.
And
yeah, let's continue.
Don't you, Trey?
What?
You have 40 minutes until Breaking Bad, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, I do. So let's move on. I want to watch Breaking Bad tonight.
So let's... I guess we're continuing on to another topic that does kind of carry over to a tangent that Trey and I went on in the first episode about a little anime series called Pat Labor.
Pat Labor!
Pat Labor was...
I know nothing about this. I'm just going to kind of phase out for about 5 minutes.
Well, conveniently, if you would like to know about it, the OVA is streaming on Hulu right now.
It is?
And it just got re-released on DVD and Blu-ray.
Ooh,
so I think the TV series is up.
I've been wanting
also
to show
there.
My wife the OVA, but all my stuff's on VHS, and I haven't hooked up my VCR in years. Ooh, we have Hulu Plus.
Pat Labor is, in my opinion, one of these really just fantastic anime that was the result of back in the 80s when anime would get produced because anyone who went to a college where they took an animation class would get together with their buddies and decide to throw something together, and Japan was in this weird money economic bubble, so they would just throw money at all sorts of different projects. That's why you were seeing things in the 80s like Super Dimension Fortress Macross, Detonator Orgun, and of course this little series called Pat Labor, which was the brainchild of Mamoru Oshii, Yutaka Izubuchi, and a bunch of other creators. Basically, Pat Labor is this mecha series, but it's not like Gundam where giant mecha is a military thing. Piloting a giant mecha is like a day job most people have. And there's this one really goofy unit of the police who have been given patrol labors, or pat labor, get it? And they're
they like pork knives in Japan.
And then in the far off future of 1998, they fight any crime that people try to commit using these labors, these giant robots. So like if someone goes wild in a construction vehicle and tries to be a terrorist, they show up with their mecha, which have these giant revolver cannons that you actually need to get out of the robot to reload.
Well, what I love about the show is just like how conventional it is. It's the, you know, that characters are dealing with budget cuts when it comes to like ammunition and like, you know, trying to deal with the actual fallout of like what they do when they crash through a city. There's a lot of deconstruction of like the giant robot series.
There's even like they even have like little shout outs to like other giant robot shows. There's a popular fan theory in the Gundam community that, for example, that Camille Bidon from Zeta Gundam is autistic. And they actually reference that in one of the later episodes. The chief of their department is like, "What do you guys think you are? You're cops. You're not some autistic kid with a military robot."
Yes.
It was. And the thing that really sets it apart, though, like Trey said, you have all this deconstruction of the mecha genre, but you really don't have much action, at least in the original OVA. The TV series and the movies added a bit more action. The TV series, or I should say the OVA especially, is more of this ensemble comedy that just happens to take place in this mecha-filled world.
And the OVA was made as a lead-in then into these two very serious movies, which kind of is weird. And then the TV series after that goes back to the lighthearted comedy of the original OVA.
With a bit more mech action, because robot fans like their mech action. I attribute a lot of that weird tonal stuff, though, to the director, Mamoru Oshii. And I don't know how familiar you guys are with his work, but he did like Ghost in the Shell. But I think the better example would be like he did the original first couple seasons of Urusei Yatsura.
Yeah.
Which is a comedy series by Rumiko Takahashi. And similarly, when he did movies for Urusei Yatsura, they got really philosophical and deep. And like, which was interesting because the basis is this goofy harem anime with an alien girl, and yet he turns it into this goofy philosophical thing. And it's the same thing with Pat Labor, that the OVA is really goofy and lighthearted, and suddenly the two movies, especially the second movie, is this hardcore political drama, maybe the scariest anime I've ever seen because it's so real.
Yeah. You know what's really interesting about Pat Labor is it's how many similarities it has to Dominion Tank Police, which the manga was coming out at about the same time. With like, you know, the literally like the similarities between like Ozaki and Izumi.
The main characters. Speaking of which, Trey gets credit for being the first person to figure out my screen name, Nick Izumi, actually comes from the main protagonist from Pat Labor.
Probably because I'm the first Pat Labor fan you met.
That seems fair. Yeah.
Because I have a bunch of Pat Labor. Now you may ask yourself, why are we talking so much about Pat Labor?
Indeed. It was announced by Mamoru Oshii, who's added again, that they are working on a live-action Pat Labor movie. It's not clear.
It's actually punched Optimus Prime. Oh, jeez.
It's really exciting. We don't know what Oshii is actually going to be doing for it, but to promote this movie, they actually constructed a two-scale Pat Labor Ingram, the main robot from the series.
To be fair, that's not as impressive as when someone built a full-size Gundam.
Yeah.
Pat Labors are only like four stories tall.
Yeah, Labors are really tiny. They're not Gundam size. Like, you stand next to a Labor and you're going to be up to its knee, maybe.
Yeah.
But like a Gundam, you stand next to it, you might be up to its foot.
I might be up to a Pat Labor's knee. A Japanese person's a little shorter. Shit. I'm tall.
So. But yeah, there's been promotional art and the thing on the posters always says the next generation. So I don't know if this is going to be a continuation of the old series or if it's going to be an adaptation, but it looks really exciting.
I don't care as long as it's got the humor.
Mm-hmm.
And giant six shooters. Because that sells the humor.
Well,
it's the ridiculous moment in the opening sequence where like they're like dragging up the giant gun on the cart.
The characters in the original version are so great because it really is an ensemble cast. It's weird because the opening of the OVA especially focuses only on Noah Izumi, but everyone is a character in this show.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't watched these in a really long time, so I've got to remember all the cast and character
I've never
names.
Seen it.
Oh God, you've gotta! It's
your time for it.
I remember Okay, really, the best guy is Ota. Ota, that's his name.
Ota, Yeah.
Who wants to shoot everything.
He is desperate to use his gun.
He wants to shoot things, and he will shoot things.
And they keep joking about how guns are basically illegal in Japan, so he is just desperate to use a gun.
Yes. Now, I think really what I need to do is build an Alphonse cosplay.
That would be amazing. That would be legitimately amazing.
For those who don't know, it's the name of the main character's robot. She names it Alphonse.
After her dog.
After her dog.
Excuse me, I should clarify. The movie says it was named after her dog. It was named after her cat, who was named after her dog. Because she sees her giant robot the same way that she sees any of her pets. She's that much of a mechaphile.
Yes.
Are we seeing why I use this character as my screen name yet? Yeah. there's some other great characters. You get Explained It All Kanika, who literally that is her function. She basically comes into the plot and explains everything at the end of the episode. You get Goto, who is the best police chief in the history of anime, at least.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't want to redirect there's a runaway mech in one episode, the runaway labor in the one of the early episodes, and he doesn't want to direct it off the freeway at this one exit because it's where he grew up. And he randomly composes haikus while he's sitting there waiting.
And he's this tricky little bugger because if he wants to get something done, he'll get it done, but he is lazy enough that he won't do it himself, but he's clever enough that he can trick other people into doing it for him.
Yeah.
So all of his plans will come together. But he can do that while sitting at his desk scratching his athlete's foot.
All right, so we should probably move on to a topic that... So, but I just want to say, we're very excited about the prospect of a live-action Pat Labor movie. Hopefully it will involve fighting kaiju, but...
And I will have to watch it.
Which happened everything. In a couple episodes.
Pat Labor Pacific Rim crossover. That's all I'm saying. With Rocket Raccoon.
To our listeners at home, if you want to get involved in a Nerd and Tie, please make fan art of Pat Labor, Pacific Rim, and Rocket Raccoon crossing over in some fashion and submit it to our Facebook page or website, and we will gladly share it with the rest of their fans.
I'm just saying, Japan's on the Pacific Rim.
It only makes sense. And I would love to see Ota deal with Kaiju. I would just love it.
He'd shoot it.
Or with Rocket Raccoon, even.
He'd shoot Rocket Raccoon at the kaiju.
Oh my god, Ota and Rocket Raccoon can drift. It'll be great.
Yes! Someone draw me fan art of Ota from Pat Labor drifting with Rocket Raccoon.
Oh.
I will pay money for that. Only $5, but still.
It's money.
All right, let's move on from Pat Labor.
Let's move to the next topic.
Yes. Finally this evening here on Nerd and Tie, we wanted to talk about something that's kind of a little bit something cool that happened this last week. Area 51, a site that has kind of lived on in sci-fi and conspiracy theories everywhere, thought to house aliens and alien technology, is finally declassified by the CIA earlier this week. Well, it was declassified back in June, but they decided to release it earlier this week to the public, finally. And according to the CIA, what do they have in there? Why? Well, kind of what everybody thought, anyway. Basically, during the 1950s, it was revealed that it was the big testing site for the U-2 spy plane, as well as the SR-71 Blackbird. Which, of course, because it's a plane that nobody had seen before, and whatnot, mistaken for UFOs. And actually, the CIA actually attributes the UFO sightings to those. So that's kind of neat. I mean, that's a huge thing.
Well, the SR-71 was jet fire, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it's kind of cool. Like, however, I would like to point out that they only declassified the evidence up until 1974.
Now, I have to say something, Nick. Everybody knows the jet fire was a Valkyrie.
Well.
In the good continuity. So.
Well, yeah, but that's going to lead on to a whole nother Macross can of beans that we don't want to get into right now. Because this is me, and that's Macross.
Oh, we should probably talk about the Harmony Gold suing Hasbro for their Jetfire-painted G.I. Joe toy that they released at San Diego Comic-Con because it looked too much like a Valkyrie.
Oh my God, we could get into that, but I don't want to derail the Area 51 too much because I actually have so much on that right now. You know, I should have thought about that.
Well, Area 51, like, they declassified through 1974, which means they really cut off declassifying anything that is still in the air, because the F-115, most are certain, was tested at the Groom Lake facility. Area 51, which is only, for those who like only briefly know anything about Area 51, Area 51 is just actually the name of a plot of land. The government land in Nevada is literally divided up into areas, and Area 51 sits snugly between Area 50 and Area 52. It's literally just the name on the map for a government area. The actual name of the base is the Groom Lake facility, or the Nevada Test and Training Range at Groom Lake. But the Groom Lake facility is where we're pretty sure they tested the F-115, but that was done in the late 70s, early 80s, and since some of the F-115s, I think, are still flying, they've mostly been replaced by the Raptor, and obviously the B-2, because although it's called the stealth fighter doesn't really have any machine guns, so it's just pretty much a bomber, but yeah.
Well, now, see, Trey, that's one theory, your thing about 1974 and the current fighters. However, there is another theory.
Oh, God, he's teaching the controversy.
That I'd like to put forward, because let's be honest here. Area 51, they might have aliens, but I would like to point out that we have evidence of its existence up to 1974, which is when Kevin Costner started acting. Now, his first movie wasn't released until 1986. So what happened in that 12-year span? Also, I'd like to point out, released in 1995, Waterworld, starring Kevin Costner. Think about it.
You know, I used to run a conspiracy website back in the day, before 9/11, which ruined all of it. And, shut up.
What I'm saying is Kevin Costner was created by the government to make Waterworld.
No.
It's there. Wake up, America.
So here's the reason why I've always been certain there's no aliens that have ever visited our planet. And there are definitely none at Area 51.
That we know of.
This is why. I believe that alien life exists. We would be far too arrogant to say that didn't. But an alien race sufficiently advanced to cross the vast interstellar distances between them and us, an alien race that would have that level of technology, that amount of power, has absolutely no reason to go to a backwater planet like ours where we can't even get out of our own solar system. It's the bracket Wisconsin theory. No one from another country travels to the U.S. and says, I want to go to Bracket, Wisconsin.
I've been there multiple times. I have family there.
Bracket, Wisconsin, for those who don't know, is a town so insignificant that even though it sits on the interstate, does not have an exit.
It is also unincorporated.
It has a bar.
It makes Endeavor look like a sprawling metropolis.
It has a bar. I don't think you even have to slow down on US 53 when you drive through it.
No, you don't. You just go right by it.
I drove through Bracket, Wisconsin every day for 6 months. I never stopped the car. So, that is why no aliens have ever been to Earth or have ever been to Area 51. If they have ever been here, it was on accident and they left. And the odds of anyone getting here accidentally, with the vast distances between objects in space,
Trey, we know that you end up on Earth every 3 days or so, or you eventually end up back at Earth. Like, that's, they said it.
If there's anything
Doctor
Who taught me, that's what I learned.
Yes, exactly.
Doctor Who, okay, let me tell you, the Doctor comes from a environment where there is a lower amount of oxygen than on Earth. Earth has a higher oxygen volume than Gallifrey. Therefore, every time he steps onto Earth, he's actually getting high from the amount of oxygen he's inhaling. That's why he likes our planet so much, because he's stoned every minute he's here. And that's why he's like that.
That answered my questions.
Yeah, that's, I think, so.
Never put that kind of thought into it.
All of Moffat's writing.
So I would say that's just about it for this episode. What a way to end it.
I love you guys.
Sweet Raptor.
You know what's great? Is people are going to think my name is actually Steve Carlsberg at GeekCon next weekend. They're going to be like, I'm going to be behind this whole thing. It's like Trey Dorn Productions. And I'll be like, where's Trey? Where's Trey, Steve? No.
See, this is why I'm really happy that I actually listened to Night Vale before now.
Except for the people that understand what you're doing and go up to you and just go, Steve Carlsberg.
I know. It'll be great.
It will be the best con ever.
Well, folks, that is it for this episode of Nerd and Tie. If you're going to GeekCon, have a wonderful weekend there.
We know we will.
Woo!
And we will talk to you again in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, so, yeah. Fun and exciting.
Yeah. See you on the flip side, everybody.
Have a wonderful evening, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
And keep on spocking in the free world.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Good.